This is Nancy Banker.
Edwin Rodriguez.
Carla.
Andrew.
Veronica Casuto.
Brown is here.
Robert Lattimore.
Shufina.
Andrew, can you make me a presenter so I can see the con?
Thanks.
Hello.
Hi, is this Savina?
Yes.
Hey, it's Agnes from Working Solutions.
Hi, Agnes. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Great.
Good.
Yeah, I'm just setting up.
Hi, Susan.
Hey,
hi,
Susan.
Everybody. Hey, Agnes, you could teach this yourself. You should you'll jump in whenever you have some information, okay?
Sure. Yeah, and actually we have the whole, some of the, I think Roberta will be here in Corinne, so I'm just setting things up in the conference room right now. So.
Great. Well, that's great. So please speak up. I'm hoping you'll add your 2 cents, you know.
Sounds good. Yeah, no, definitely.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
This is Shufina from Cameo, and hopefully everybody has also can see the screen and has dialed in. And just want to say hello and thank you all. We're going to get started in just a minute or two, I'll introduce you to Susan, and then we'll go through the program. But for now, let's just hold for another minute or two.
Esther Elizondo.
Louisa
Miller.
Hey, who just joined?
Esther Elizondo from Pace.
Oh, hello. Greetings.
Hello.
Louisa Miller.
Oh, hello, Louisa. Which organization are you with?
With the Inland Empire Small Business Development Center.
Oh, welcome. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mari Lavalvo. I am with the SBDC in Contra Costa County.
Oh, thank you for joining us. This is Shufina from Cameo, and we have quite a few of your colleagues and fellow Cameo members on the line.
Hello, this is Carlos from Anio America in San Jose.
Oh, hello, Carlos. Welcome. This is
Shufina
from Cameo.
Susan.
Hello, who just joined us?
Dana.
Dana, from which org?
From the Merit Program in Salem, Oregon.
Oh, okay. Welcome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Susan, shall we, this is Shufina from Cameo, and this is the first of our series of microloan business readiness series, our profit and loss webinar that is going to be delivered by Susan Brown, our Cameo's longtime microloan consultant. Is that Nathaniel? Hello.
Yeah. Hey, how are you?
Very well, thank you. We have a lot of people on the line today, and generally we do go through introductions, but I'm afraid that we would just eat up a lot of time by going through all of the organizations and the introductions. So let me just welcome you all and thank you all for your participation. Just a couple of things. We don't tend to mute people on these calls because we do want people to feel like they can speak up if they have a question or text one in on the chat side. But if you would, just make sure that you mute your own phone, especially if you have background noise, because it is a little distracting. We're on one of those funny, you know, VoIP lines, so we thank you for that.
Hi, this is Danielle Yorko.
Oh, thank you. Hello. Anyway, if I can just turn this over to Susan. And Susan, would you like to introduce yourself and add anything else about housekeeping and logistics before we go through?
Hi, everyone. Yes, it's Susan Brown here. Welcome. I'm glad to see we have a big group. I also know we have a few people.
It's Planning Chain from PACE.
Hello. I don't know all of you, but I know some of you are experienced lenders, and so if anyone has some experience or a different perspective to chime in, please do. And those of you who have questions, please chime in as well. I'm happy to field questions. Just go ahead and mute your phone if you don't have a question. It really just helps everybody hear better. But if you do have something to say, please pipe up. Or you can do it in the chat room. No problem. So as Shavina said, we're doing a three-part series this month of October on loan readiness for microlending. Today we're kind of focusing on profit and loss. I'm also providing a little overview about financials in general in microlending. We're going to be doing some the basics of P&L and giving you some tools for profit and loss analysis and talking about what lenders look for. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. So I want to just start off with a couple of polls, and I just was wondering how many people have an active microlending program right now? Who out there is lending, doing microloans, and who is more of a TA provider or some other capacity?
Well, at New America, we're doing some microloans.
Good. So answer yes, then, to our poll. It looks like right now I've got 12 yeses and 13 microlenders and maybe 9 who are TA providers. Oh, now we're up to 15. Okay. So the majority of you are currently 16 now, microlenders. 17, it's going up, are microlenders. So I'm presenting information today that are kind of what I understand and know about the microlending field, having worked in it pretty intimately for about the last 3 years. But please, I'm not a direct lender. I'm like a support person to lenders. So pipe in if you have a different perspective. And then I just have a second poll here to ask you guys is, like, how much do you feel like you know about profit and loss statements? Is it sort of a brand new concept for you? Do you sort of know the basics, but other than the basics, you don't have a lot of skills right now? Or do you feel like you really understand how to use the P&L as a management credit analysis tool? How would you rate your skills with a profit and loss statement? Go ahead and answer that poll. So it looks like the bulk of you say you know the basics. Okay, so it looks like about 7 people are new to it. Around 15 people know the basics, and maybe 8 feel they know it really well. All right, so for you 8 who know it really well, if you've got other ideas, again, I say I welcome you to join us in terms of speaking up. All right. So I wanted to take a little bit of time to set some context for, actually, before we dive into the profit and loss statement, and a little bit of a way of introduction to the whole series. Why bother to understand and learn about financials? And I'm kind of assuming that some of you are making referrals. And certainly, if you are an agency that's doing technical assistance and you're referring to a lender, you want to make sure that you're providing quality referrals to any lender out there that you might be referring clients to. Because I've been in this business a long time, since the 80s, and I do know that there's kind of a standing challenge between lenders and technical assistance providers in terms of understanding each other. So I think the more that we can facilitate the communication and have better referrals there, not only will your partnerships be better, but also your clients will be happier, because you don't want to make a bunch of referrals only to have both the staff and the client feel discouraged that they're going through a lot of work and not succeeding. So we have an hour today, which is very little time, especially in a webinar format. But financials are just I took the National Development Council training many, many years ago and spent a full week learning about projections and P&Ls and balance sheets, and they can tell you all kinds of things about the business, from just basic stuff about whether you're profitable. It can help you understand pricing. It's a world into how you're managing inventory. Certainly learning about equity, really understanding how your product line varies maybe in terms of contributing to the bottom line. Some product lines can contribute a higher margin than others, and much, much more. There's so much more that financials can tell us. But it also can really tell you whether a business can finance its own growth or if it needs financing. And if it does need financing, it really gives you some information about how much, what type, and does the business qualify. So we're just going to get our toe in the water today on those last couple of bullets and then take it further a little bit as we go through some of the other parts of the series this month. But like I said, I took NDC training a long time ago and have used it for many years. So I was going to say, and you'll see at the end of the presentation, that if you have an interest in more in-depth training on this, just call me or email me, and my contact information will be at the end of the program today, because there's so much more to do than what we're going to talk about today.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is Yossi Lam. I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, that's okay. Thanks for joining, Yossi. We just got started.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
And if you could mute your phone, someone, or whoever.
Yeah, someone's kind of, believe it or not, even if you're just shuffling papers, it can make a lot of noise. So just go ahead and mute your phone if you can. So before we jump into P&L, I kind of wanted to set some context about microlending, because when we're talking about financials, we're like, what in the old days, it was just, you know, P&L and a balance sheet kind of thing, or maybe projections, a cash flow statement. But for microlending, it means different things at different levels of lending. So, and each loan program has its own way of approaching this. But I'm kind of just jumping in with an example. This is a little bit, I think, how Axiom Texas does it. In terms of what kind of financial data is required at different levels of lending. So often for the very small loans under $15,000, we're not even talking about a traditional statement like a P&L or balance sheet. We're just talking about bank statements, pay stubs, and tax returns. So, which in the old days, maybe people would expect more, but now they're kind of tiering it this way. So small loans, maybe we don't have any traditional financial statements. Maybe at loans between $15,000 and $50,000, you might start to get bank statements and tax returns, more of them, a deeper history of how that's going. But then you might start needing a profit and loss statement at that point. And then it's pretty common for over $50,000 that we're really talking about getting into the area where you have more financial statements and the full set of P&Ls and maybe a balance sheet. So that each level of lending requires sort of a different number and type of financial statements and financial information. And I think on the part of you all as, you know, lenders and business consultants, it takes different skill sets for you to know how to help your clients develop those statements and how to interpret them for lending purposes. So there's some investment that has to happen in knowing how to get there as you march up the line here in terms of sophistication and financial statements. The one thing I want to add here is that in our series, we're not covering how to sort of use bank statements as sort of a lending tool, although I thought about it, and I'd be happy to consider that. I'll be honest, one of the challenges I have is the best, and you'll see, I'm going to show you some examples of P&Ls a little later today. I have a hard time getting examples of bank statements. a good example and a bad example to use as tools for teaching. So if anyone after the program has ideas for me, please let me know, because then we could maybe include that in our series. A couple more things before we jump in. I'm making an assumption that QuickBooks is kind of the standard of what you kind of need to have in place to develop a P&L. And it is kind of a high bar for some startups and micro businesses. It does sort of require a full accounting, standard accounting setup, which is sort of challenging. I know where I live in a rural area, even some of the local bookkeepers don't really do it right. So it takes a fair amount of knowledge about financial statements to set up QuickBooks correctly and get someone launched that way. And there is a whole bunch of new kind of phone apps and sort of mobile device apps out there. I kind of looked at a few of them. FreshBooks was one I looked at. I actually haven't done enough research to know whether they really provide a full sort of bona fide P&L that an accountant would like, or if there are systems that are sort of short of that. Does anyone quickly know whether any of these programs that I've listed here or something like that, the sort of mobile device approach for income and expense tracking, really produces what we'd call a real P&L?
Susan, this is Shufina.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't have a response to that question, but I did want to just take the opportunity to say that there was a question that was texted in inquiring why we're not covering balance sheet on this presentation, and this might be just, if you just want to touch on that for a second too, that probably
would be
good time. Oh,
sure. Be happy to. You know, I'd be happy to talk about doing a webinar on balance sheets, so maybe we can, if you're interested, could you just write it in the chat room or something? It's hard to do it on a one-hour webinar. I got to tell you, I'm challenged even to do justice to the P&L in a one-hour webinar, and the balance sheet is even more complex, and especially because there's so many more types of analyses you can do with it. So I think we'd have to we'd need a lot more time. Like I said, I spent 40 hours learning this stuff, and you know, a one-hour webinar, it's become the new norm. But as a longtime trainer, I've got to tell you, it's a very limited way to train or teach anybody anything. So why don't you just email or in the chat room kind of give us your preferences and your requests around that and what your tolerance level is for more kinds of training, because we would need a lot more time. But I'm happy to teach balance sheets at a future time.
Thanks, Susan. We do have quite a few folks texting in, so thanks for
great.
That.
Great. Okay, good. Well, if you can just track that for us, Shufina, that'd be great. So anyway, I'm going to skip this thing about the sort of new wave of sort of mobile device income and expense tracking systems of various kinds. I don't know enough about them, and I don't know what the quality is in terms of a quality financial statement, but maybe, again, if you've got information about that, you can let us know. So what are lenders we're looking for? For the most part, they're really looking for certainly good information, accurate, what we call quality financial statements, a clean P&L that's properly set up and has consistent data input. It's a classic garbage in, garbage out kind of situation with any of these financial statements. So if you don't do it right at the beginning, you're not going to have anything good to work with when you go to print it out. And once you do have a quality P&L, you know, they're certainly looking for, and I'll give you some more information specifics about what they're looking for, but of course they're looking for growing sales, good margins, smart, you know, sensible expenditures, and obviously some net profit and cash flow. Now, net profit and cash flow don't always mean the same thing, and that's a more complicated topic for another day, but for our simple micro enterprises, that's often they can be somewhat synonymous. So that's what they're looking for in a P&L. So how do we get there? How do we get to a quality P&L statement? Again, you have to understand QuickBooks. You need to know the software, and you really need to know your basic accounting rules about income and expense, and then all your balance sheet accounts. So if that's not a skill you guys have on board, I suggest you get it through, you know, community college or QuickBooks training or however. But I've seen so many poorly designed ones in my day from people who really didn't understand it. So you're not doing anybody any favors not to have those skills on board in your organizations. And then you have to train your client or your business owner on really consistent entries so that it's done. You know, we're comparing apples and apples. One of the things we're going to get to later today is trend analysis. It doesn't do any good to have it one way one year and a different way the next year and so on. It's just it kind of renders your reports useless. So we want to set it up right and do it the same way all the time. If you come across a business where things are really messed up, you may need to say, hey, we got to start over and do it better, clean it up from scratch. I was never very good at doing what I would call kind of forensic QuickBooks and fixing all those errors. I hated doing that, so I always started over. So there's a huge laundry list of classic mistakes that can be in a profit and loss statement, but here's just or QuickBooks setup in general, and here's just a few of them I came across in my day that were pretty common. Having a lot of having way too many income and expense accounts, and then having many of them be duplicative and sort of like they'd have equipment, or something like a common one would be office supplies, program supplies, food supply. I mean, have all these different supply categories or things like that that on any given check it could fit in several different categories. So that can make a big mess. If you have too many income and expense accounts, QuickBooks volunteers a ton of income and expense accounts, and I think it's a mistake to accept the standard ones. I think it's better to build your own. But if you get so many that your P&L is two pages, I'd say you've gone too far. A P&L should be one page, and there's a bunch of reasons for that. But mostly I think people can get their head around information on one page a lot better than on two pages. And there's few businesses, especially micro businesses, that are complicated enough that really require two pages. There's a lot of other ways to get the information out of QuickBooks. People use they create accounts instead of understanding the whole repertoire of reporting that's available in QuickBooks in the background. Clearly, a lot of people don't understand the relationship between cost of goods sold and inventory. We'll talk a little bit about that later. Debt is often entered as income. Principal and interest isn't split. They have balance sheet accounts on the profit and loss statements. Their equity accounts are very mangled. So that's kind of the tip of the iceberg, but there's really lots of mistakes that can be made. That it's good to at least be able to look at a P&L and know whether you're looking at something that's set up properly or not. And that's, I'd say, a really important skill for all of us to have. The last thing I'd say, just as a tip, especially with your new businesses and your small businesses, there's sometimes resistance to having a business checking account and a personal checking account, but tell them that it's really important to keep them separate. Okay, so let's actually talk about the profit and loss statement. I'll pause right there, though, and ask, is there any questions just sort of on getting to where we can actually use the profit and loss as a quality instrument for analysis and understanding a business?
This is Shufina, and just one other comment onto your comments where you said that people sometimes don't want to open up another bank account. And you can always say if you open up another bank account, then the bank does your accounting for you. It's not really true, but it helps a lot.
Well, it's the starting place, that's for sure.
Right.
Well, that's from the Business Development Center.
Hi.
Hi.
Did you have a question?
No, sorry. I was having problems with the system to log in, so I'm just joining the conversation. So
oh, good. I'm glad you made it.
And make sure you mute your phone when you're
done.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, just a reminder to folks to mute, please. Thank you. Susan, we have a couple of hands raised.
Sure.
Fred has a raised hand.
Yeah,
go ahead,
please.
Fred. Fred, you'll have to unmute yourself.
We can't hear you, Fred.
I can't hear you.
Was there another hand, Shufina?
Yeah, I thought, Agnes, did you have your hand raised? Somebody else raised their hand, too.
No, I didn't.
Okay, sorry. I just they both flashed across the screen quickly, and now all right. So let's move on then, Susan.
Great. So we'll move on. So now let's actually talk about what a profit and loss statement is. It's a financial statement that measures revenues and expenses over a period of time. So unlike the balance sheet, that's always just a, sort of a snapshot, like a right now snapshot. Profit and loss is over a month, a quarter, or a year is the typical increments. And it measures profitability, whether the business is making a profit on what it sells. And like I said, that's not always – a business can be profitable and out of cash, but that we kind of have to get into another level. But at least it's a good starting point to know, and cash is often what we're measuring to see if a business is loan ready or qualifies for a loan. But it's a great starting place. So the profit and loss shows the ability to successfully manage the buying and selling process. It measures the ability to grow, support the owner, meaning being able to take an owner's draw and support personal expenses. And it's also a great place to find out whether a business can repay debt service, meaning whether they can make a loan payment every month. Do they have the capacity to take on a loan payment every month? Which is pretty much every lender's job is to figure that part out. And it's a really important report from your accounting software program. It's not the only report. When I was setting people up on QuickBooks, there's some reports that are very important, such as an inventory report or collections report. But always try to encourage your business owners to look at this once a month if they're not comfortable, if they're not in that habit already.
Check, check, check.
Hello, was there a question? Okay, I'll keep going here. So what's the basic formula? The profit and loss is really intuitive. That's one reason it's so nice to use. The balance sheet kind of baffles everybody for a while. It takes much longer to learn that one. But the profit and loss is pretty intuitive. You know, it's money in and money out. It's all your sales, your revenue, and so on, minus all your expenses, and that's pretty much your net profit. The only trick in there is that the expenses are split up into two categories. One category is called cost of goods sold, and one category of expenses is called overhead. So let's just march through these quickly. This won't take long. So income, sales, revenue, they're all kind of synonymous, and it's really just the money. It's just your sales, the money that a business has earned from the sale of goods or services. That one's pretty easy. And this is the only piece I think that's a little tricky on the profit and loss. It's the cost of goods sold, and it's expenses that are directly associated with the production or service delivery for sales in that period. Okay, so that's kind of a mouthful. This mostly pertains, it's also called variable expense, but I like cost of goods sold better. This mostly pertains to businesses that have inventory, so either manufacturers or retailers, restaurants, that kind of thing. And so ideally, what cost of goods sold is, it's the materials that went into what they sold for that particular, let's say, month. Let's say if you were looking at the P&L for January. Cost of goods sold would be the inventory used up for the items sold in January. So if there's stuff sitting in inventory that hasn't been used yet, technically that's still in the garage, so to speak, or in the warehouse or on the shelves. It's not on the P&L yet. So where that sits in financial statements, it sits over on the balance sheet in the asset section as inventory. And then if you have the right kind of setup and sophistication, you can kind of funnel the inventory into the profit and loss statement as things sell. It's a little bit complicated to do this. QuickBooks does it pretty easily for retailers and things like that, but it's not a little bit harder with manufacturers. It's not impossible, but it's a little bit harder. But if you can work with your clients on figuring out how to do this so that they at least can get a ballpark figure or maybe quarterly figure or every 6 months or something, if they have a kind of business where measuring cost of goods sold is important, working with them to figure out how they can kind of capture that number is great. So cost of goods sold for manufacturers is basically like inventory, right? It's all your stuff that you use to or your wholesale costs of your goods that you sell if you're in a retail situation or a restaurant situation. It can also be labor associated with that. So if you have someone, if your business owner has somebody who's full-time, quote-unquote, manufacturing something, then they might be under cost of goods sold. A lot of micros aren't big enough for that. Service businesses don't usually have cost of goods sold. There are some exceptions, like I have a consulting business. The only time I have cost of goods sold is if I hire a subcontractor to work directly on a project. Otherwise, most service businesses don't have it.
Susan, it's Shufina, and I just Fred's hand is raised again, so I think you, Fred, would you like to pose?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, uh-huh. We can hear you.
Oh, great, wonderful. I don't. The dialing thing was a little off. Actually, you're still on the same subject, so it's perfect. But as far as QuickBooks specifically, what's a good example of a common mistake people make with regards to a cost of goods sold versus inventory?
I think the most common thing people do with QuickBooks, because it is challenging, especially if you're a manufacturer, is they just put all of inventory on the P&L as soon as they buy it. So let's say they go out and buy 3 months' worth of, it's a restaurant, and they buy let's say 3 months' worth of flour or something. I mean, I'm making it up here. And they really only use up a third of it in the first month. But they show it all as expensed in January, when in fact it's really meted out over 3 months. Now, what I will say is, when I was setting people up on QuickBooks, I always thought you don't want to bury somebody in nitpicking, accounting when they're trying to run a business. So it takes some discernment to be judicious with people and say, okay, what does it make sense to ask them to spend time doing so that their books are accurate? And what does it's like, oh, my gosh, let's not bother, because that's taking away from the buying and selling, which is really the important part of their business.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of be careful about how much you recommend. But with certain businesses, if they really want to check their pricing and they really want to be able to manage their bottom line accurately, they're going to have to come up with some way of measuring inventory if they buy more inventory per month than they use up in a month.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So once we take our sales and we subtract cost of goods sold, then we have gross profit. And this demonstrates the ability to control costs, production costs, as well as pricing. It's really an important margin for anybody who's selling a product or has inventory. So that's one of the reasons when we get to the tools section, the analysis section, how important it is to sort of have a good cost of goods sold for certain businesses, even though it can be challenging to get there.
And Susan, Nancy just texted in a comment that I think is important too. She says, and I think this is accurate, some owners expense inventory because they or their tax accountant does it to reduce potential income taxes.
Yes, that is true.
Yes.
That is true. And one thing I will say, I think for all of you as business consultants, I worked with business owners who got some pretty wild advice from accountants. Some accountants are great because they understand the issue of running a business. Some accountants give whacked advice because they're just looking at tax liability and they're not looking at management. So again, it's one of your jobs, I think, to help discern, like, if you had a ton of inventory you wanted to expense before the end of the year and it truly distorted your statements, I don't know if I would advise that. I'd have to weigh that against how much taxes you're going to save versus having distorted financials. So that's like one accountant I worked with one time used to just tell his business owner to buy equipment willy-nilly to reduce his tax liability, and the guy was spending all kinds of capital on equipment he didn't need. So there's some discernment needed between balancing that tax liability and really understanding your business well through your financials. So there's kind of a balance there.
Right. And then on the lending side, for the lenders who are reviewing those financials, to be able to have that depth of knowledge to interpret, those investments or expenditures, across those categories.
Right, because if you actually expense a ton of inventory that you didn't really truly use up in that period, it's going to distort your margins, it's going to distort your bottom line, and make you look less profitable. And that's the classic problem of choosing between do I falsely reduce my tax liability and then make myself look less eligible for lending and distort my financial statements, or do I keep it accurate, go ahead and pay my taxes, and keep myself open to qualifying for lending? kind of have to choose there sometimes. Okay, overhead. Overhead is really everything else, and it's expenses that don't vary with production. They're called fixed expenses. It's really kind of everything but inventory for most small businesses. Business owners tend to want to pick nits and say, well, my, you know, electricity goes up and down every month. But it's like, no. It's not that. It's just everything except things directly, like, embedded in the product you're selling. And, again, QuickBooks is going to usually suggest a million and one overhead accounts, and I really suggest editing it heavily or starting from scratch. Okay. So then we get to net profit. Gross profit minus overhead is net profit. And so, of course, one of the things you can look at the bottom line and think, oh, we have all this money. But actually, net profit has to cover a lot of things. It definitely has to cover owner's draw, so the business owner has to take money out to support him or herself and their family. It's got to cover that. But if the business owner has expansion plans, has some equipment or expanded inventory purchases in the future, the net profit's going to get sucked up by that. It certainly also needs to cover any new or existing or future loan repayments, because one of the things that doesn't show on the P&L, like I said earlier, they don't split interest and principal. The principal portion doesn't show up on a P&L. So there's some non-cash expenditures that happen that just show up on the balance sheet, and a lot of business owners can be a little unaware of that. And, of course, they have to pay income taxes. Few of us who are self-employed haven't been surprised by a quarterly or end-of-year tax payment, and it's our job to help our business owners get prepared for that and set some money aside for that. So what I wanted to do – oh, let me pause there. Let me go back a slide and pause there. Are there any questions just on the balance sheet before we look at an example? Okay, great. So what I want to do is I want to look at a company. This is actually, I call it bad company, which always makes me want to sing a song from like the 70s. But this is an actual company, a business I worked with. I've edited it so it hides all identified information. But you can see it, I say here it's typical of microenterprises. This one was particularly bad, but it – one thing good about it is it captures kind of every mistake in the book out there, and it's not uncommon to have at least some of these problems on a small business's P&L, especially ones that have been done either by the business owner themselves or by a bookkeeper who doesn't really know, have enough training. So what I'd like you to do, I forgot to say at the very beginning, Andrew, did we send out the documents? I can't remember. Sorry. There's a couple of documents that I'm going to be using that I think Andrew was going to email out ahead of time. And if you have a chance to print those out, great. If not, we'll just look at them on my desktop here. This just the problem is you can't see the whole document. So I call this ABC Company. This is a real company, and this is about, as you can see, a couple years' worth of data. Right off the bat, you see it's two pages, which, again, I recommend not to have. And I can't fit this all on your screen so you can see it. But let me just pause right here. And I'd like people to start looking at this. If a business owner came in and handed this to you and they were saying, I want financing, you need to be able to discern whether this is, first of all, a document you can work with that's a true reflection of the business that will position you and the business owner to know whether they can take on financing. So I was going to throw it open to the group and just start naming some things you see in here that you think might not be set up properly. Go ahead and unmute yourself and just speak up.
There's a long list. this is Nancy Banker.
Nancy, which organization are you with?
I'm associated with the West Company.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, so go ahead. Do a couple, Nancy, and then we'll give someone else a chance.
Two lines for liability insurance, a lot of items that belong on a balance sheet, including loan payments and petty cash.
Mm-hmm.
equipment, what is it? There's something in here that makes no sense at all because it's a very big number, and I can't figure out why that number is.
Yeah, and what I love is petty
it
cash.
It seems kind of odd.
Yeah, and petty cash is $6,000. Petty cash at $6,000, you go, why is petty cash $6,000?
Because I think it actually should be in the balance sheet under under the bank.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. There's
and
that.
Even
and
then,
it's a
large amount. Yes.
Yes. And then there's a loan repayment for $10,000 that doesn't belong there. So.
Yeah. Exactly. So anybody else?
I also kind of noticed that there's a huge. On the first page, there's a huge amount for reproduction and printing, and it seems like that would probably be associated with cost of goods sold in some way.
Perfect. Yeah, this business actually produced cards, a type of card, you might say almost like a greeting card. So, yeah, they went and expensed their entire inventory, exactly.
Yeah, 9 times cut from cost of goods sold is pretty rare.
Yeah.
There's no reflection of an interest being paid on the loan, so am I missing?
Yeah, I think they had lots of loans, first of all, which I personally was a red flag for me, right? It's like, how come you have all these different loans? But also, yeah, they were lumping them in willy-nilly, interest, principal, whatever, you know, we have no idea. You're right, so they weren't separating out interest and principal.
In addition, it seems like the sales tax is kind of low, considering what they're making.
Yeah, and sales tax should be on the balance sheet because sales tax is just
too.
A pass-through. It's not even supposed to be there.
True.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The total organization is whack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And their state tax. I'm assuming that's their...
Yeah, that's the California required for...
Right.
Any
corporation or an LLC.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, there's all this, and commission, if you truly are paying commission, that would be cost of goods sold, so that shouldn't be there. There's even just things like some are all caps and some are lower caps. Advertising is misspelled. I mean, you know, you want to present a professional thing. You know, it's like... And they have equipment supply and equipment and new equipment. So that's one of those sort of weird duplicative accounts.
Exactly. But new equipment, if it's a newly purchased item, that's a single item. It belongs on the balance sheet and it needs to be depreciated on the income statement. So.
Possibly if it's small. I personally expense stuff like my computers the year I buy them. So it kind of depends on the size. But they have 7,000 there. That's probably... At least, in any event, it's confusing, right?
I was saying, if it's one item, it should be depreciated. If it's a $1,000 computer, you can expense it.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't really need to belabor this too much, but you get the idea, right? That, you know, and most small businesses aren't quite this bad, but I'm going to be honest. I was probably helping people with QuickBooks for about 3 or 4 years, and maybe did 100 businesses or something like that. It was kind of rare to find any. It was still like maybe 5% had it set up properly. So, you have to kind of work with your business owners to set it up well. This is a completely useless document in terms of understanding this business. So, and here they've been maintaining lists for years and years. So this is part of our job is to help clean this thing up, get it set up right, and so that we can really understand what's going on with the business because we can't understand really anything from this. And in fact, it makes them very much look like they have no idea what they're doing. So, you know, we don't want to present that kind of picture to a lender. Are there any other comments anybody wants to make about this or about their own experience with this whole field of helping business owners?
Brandon Napoli has raised his hand.
Go, Brandon.
It's not Brandon, it's Circe. But
okay.
Whole staff is sitting here. I have a question in regards to where it says capital loan payment owner C, A, and D.
Mm-hmm.
And you were stating that it should not be there. And that it's too many loans. Mm-hmm. But if the loans are from different owners, then how would you categorize it?
Well, I don't. First of all, most if you have outstanding loans to people, they need to be on the balance sheet. So that's the first thing. If the owners have all loaned money to the business,
mm-hmm.
that would be under your long-term liability over on the balance sheet. And only the payments, interest payments would show up on the P&L. Any principal payments aren't supposed to show up at all. And so all of that, all those loans should be, nothing should be showing on here but interest. And, in fact, I think you're right. There's no interest.
Mm-hmm.
There's no interest account at all. So they were just kind of completely mishandling their loans. And you know, if you look at the bottom line on this business, net income is negative $37,000. So, but although it's impossible to say what really the net income is because it's such a mess, but in any event, if the owners are loaning money to the business, it can be it's often a good sign, but it has to be done in the right way and done in a way that makes sense given the scale and type of business it is. And looking at it this way, it just gives you the impression that they didn't understand what they were doing, you know. And in fact, if a business is very, very undercapitalized and all of their, you know, quote-unquote equity is in the form of subordinated debt from the owners, that's a business that those owners really probably just need to invest that money as equity and leave it in there and not expect it to be paid back as a loan. So this is where we get into this whole kind of balance sheet discussion, and it's complicated. But it's one thing for the owners to loan money to a healthy business on periodically and then get paid back. It's another thing for a really undercapitalized business to have all their equity sort of booked as loans from owners. Okay, so
we have one more question, it looks like.
Oh, sure.
Nancy, again. Go
sure,
ahead.
Sure, one
Nancy.
More.
It goes back to the comment someone made about the printing and reproduction. And because that is buried under operating costs rather than in COGS, it prevents the owner from really understanding what their gross margin is and compare it to industry ratings that will give them
exactly.
some idea, and it'll give them a much better idea what problems they're encountering because of the way they've laid out their
Okay, so
that's a really good point. I also think that in that vein, it really helps. It makes it difficult for them to actually learn to cut costs with regards to different aspects of their cost of goods sold. They're not looking in those items as a part of the P&L before gross profit.
Exactly. Good point. Good points, all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask everyone to mute their phones because we're having some background noise, and I'm going to keep charging ahead here because we only have 15 minutes left. Yeah. Can everyone make sure you're muted? Steve, will play? Thank you. So we're going to do a little bit more here, but the key profit and loss indicators are, you want to see sales growing over time. You want to see cost of goods stable and falling, and people made great references to comparing that to industry standards, knowing, like, as a restaurant, what your food cost should be, that kind of thing, and maybe a restaurant, your food cost versus, you know, other types of food businesses. You want to see your gross profit rising and your net profit rising. You also want to make sure there's cash available to pay new debt service beyond owner's draw, taxes, and existing debt. So those are some of the kinds of indicators we're looking for. So we're going to go over global cash assessment next time in 2 weeks from now, but usually you're looking for about 1.25 coverage for your loan. So in other words, if your loan payment every month is $100, you want to see excess cash of about $125. So people are looking for a little padding in terms of loan coverage for taking on new debt. So you kind of want to, we'll do that next time, but it's looking for enough cash once you get to the bottom line and you subtract it out owner's draw and you subtract it out taxes and various things, how much cash is left over at the end of the day to take on a loan. And that's what a lender is looking for. It's looking for that kind of coverage. So I did want to spend a little time looking at some tools here for what the trend analysis, especially as you get into those loans at 50,000 and up. I think trend analysis and margin analysis all becomes more important. So trend analysis is when we kind of create a spreadsheet and we compare a business to itself and, like, line up the numbers 3 years in a row, like year-end, three-year-ends. Sometimes you can do it with two. We're going to do it with two today. But ideally 3 years in a row, again, where the P&L and the balance sheet are set up the same way, data's been put in the same way, and you're comparing apples to apples 3 years in a row. You can do it two ways. You can look just at the dollar amounts and kind of look at actually what's happening in terms of dollars on the business over time. And then the other way you can do it is by looking at percentages. This is the margin analysis, and that's where you convert your P&L numbers into percentages of total sales. And this gives you a much different look into the business and what's going on with the business. There's the formulas there, cost of goods sold divided by sales, overhead divided by sales, net profit divided by sales. And again, you put this in a spreadsheet side by side over each year so that you can kind of see how the business is tracking over time. So again, this really is a great tool for figuring out profitability. It helps you totally understand what's going on with the business in terms of management. It's a fantastic way for an organization to set goals and create, bring more to the bottom line. And really, once businesses get into bigger lending, sort of beyond micro-lending, it's kind of critical to qualify for lending because this is how lenders do it. And ideally, you've got 3 years if you can. So let's go back to my desktop here and look at another business. So hold on. Let me see if I do this right. Share. And I need to change documents here. So here is another document. I got this straight out of QuickBooks. You know, if you go into QuickBooks, they give you a sample company. So this is a sample construction company straight out of QuickBooks, which was nice because I knew the stuff had been entered properly. And so you got 2 years of clean data. So you got 2 years of profit and loss side by side. So we're looking at the numbers so you can actually see total income, total expenses side by side, 1 year compared to the next. But what QuickBooks also does, if you go into custom reports, is you can click this little thing and it says percentage of income, and it actually does that math for you and gives you the margin analysis right there next to it. So it makes it really easy to see at least 2 years in a row what's going on with this business. So as you can see, this gives us a lot more. First of all, it's clean. We can actually see what's going on with this business. And second of all, we can do some real analysis on it. So I'm trying to think, what should I do first? So why don't I pause here? And well, actually, since we're kind of running short on time, let me do this. Let me scroll down. What I have at the bottom of this sheet, and unfortunately we can't see both at the same time on my screen, is kind of a lender analysis. Remember I said there's those key kind of indicators? So if a lender was looking at this and they were going to have kind of a cheat sheet and say, okay, let me click through my key indicators and see what I think about this business. This business looks pretty darn good because the owner's going to say, is there growing sales? Are sales growing? And you look at this P&L, this two-year trend analysis, and you can say, yeah, sales have gone from 165,000 to 449,000. So that's actually a huge increase in growth. Then they can say, well, what about, you know, the gross profit? Is the gross profit increasing as well? And it's like, yeah, the gross profit is also increasing considerably, just in terms of dollars, 95,000 to, is it 269,000, something like that. And is the net profit growing? Yes, that is also growing. It went from 69,000 to 112,000. So right there, we kind of just did our dollar analysis and said, yeah, this business is growing. At first blush, looking just at the dollars, this business is doing great. But then we can jump to our margin analysis and get a whole other sort of set of information about the business, which is the growth in sales, for example. Well, sales are growing a lot, and you can calculate that at 172% sales growth. But the next question is this business controlling its margins? It's growing a lot. It's growing very fast. That can be very challenging for a business to control its margins. And the main one, as I said, is often that cost of goods sold. But you can actually see this business went from spending about 42 cents out of every dollar on cost of goods sold to spending 40 cents out of every dollar on inventory and cost of goods sold. So you're thinking about a construction company. We're talking about all the building materials he's buying. Maybe because his scale or her scale has gone up, she's getting better discounts from suppliers. But that's a great sign that a business has grown that radically in 2 years and has still managed to keep its cost of goods sold stable or falling, in this case falling. And then the other thing is you can see that even though, total expenses. Now, expenses did jump up a lot, and you can see that. It went from being about 16% of total income to 35%. So sales went up a lot. But as you can see, the main thing this business owner did in when it's handling all this growth is to hire employees. There was no payroll expense the first year, and then it had substantial payroll expense the second year. So the percentage of expenses as a percentage of total sales went up, but still his net income went up. He still made money. And actually, that's usually pretty big. I don't know if any of you have had situations where your business is trundling along with no employees, they add employees, and pretty soon they're like in the hole and not making any money at all because they haven't really learned how to manage employees, grow, and adjust their pricing to compensate for that. And I'd say this business did great. His expenses went up considerably, but he still managed to make more money in the end. So, and at the very bottom there, I just did, I did just sort of a little bit of a analysis there at the bottom. Like, if you just assumed this is kind of what owners do, and we'll get to more of this next in 2 weeks from now. If you kind of assume an owner's draw, let's say a $45,000, let's say this is somebody who's supporting a family and needs about that much to take that much out of the business to live on, and you assume some level of taxes. It's hard to know what the taxes would be for this person. You can do it. This isn't a complete analysis, but it's a mini-analysis. You take the total net profit, you subtract out owner's drawn taxes, and then you get the net cash available for potential debt service. And if you just sort of make some assumptions about what an annual debt service payment, a loan payment, let's say I just made something up of $2,000 a month, which would be a pretty large loan maybe for this business, you can kind of see what sort of debt service coverage this business has. And in year one, remember we're looking for that 1.25 kind of debt service coverage. The first year the business didn't have that kind of coverage, but in the second year they do. And the only thing you'd want to ask this question at this point, since we only have a one-year ability to pay that kind of debt service, is that enough of a trend? Is that enough history with this business for you to feel comfortable lending them money at that level? But that kind of gives you an idea of how to analyze a P&L with the trend analysis, with the margin analysis, and taking a window and looking at it through a lender's eyes with that sort of analysis at the bottom. So let me pause there and see if there's any questions. And I wanted to say you can do this entire thing like this with a balance sheet. It just looks different, and you're looking a little bit at different numbers and different ratios and things like that. But you can do the exact same thing with a balance sheet. Or almost the same thing with the balance sheet. Any questions about this, about how you do this or how it's looking or how I got there or anything like that? Okay. So just quickly, there are, you know, there's probably a million borrowing red flags. Here's just a few of them. You know, if you run into a business owner that's using short-term financing like credit cards or operating cash for long-term assets, it's kind of matching sources and uses of funds. You want to make sure whatever kind of lending the person's going for, it matches their use so that they're paying it back at a so the term of the lending, the loan, is matched to whatever they're using it on, and they're not sucking up all their operating cash on fixed assets. A lot of times, new business owners don't have a great idea of exactly how to invest their money to increase productivity. Sometimes people come in and they want to make really large equipment or real estate investments when it's not appropriate for their level of business. And sometimes people can get into using loan funds or debt to compensate for low profitability, which is, I'm sure you've all seen people who've gotten into a deep credit card hole. that's where really helping people with that quality profit and loss statement is helpful, to help them see it's like debt's not going to dig you out of lack of profits, you know, at least not in the long run. It's only a short-term solution. Are there any other borrowing red flags people want to mention that they've seen?
Susan, this is Shufina again. We have another query from the Opportunity Fund group, I guess. They were a little confused by the debt service coverage. And, you know, Opportunity Fund is one of the best lenders in the state. So if they are confused, I'm sure everyone else is too. So do you think we could go through that again, just maybe quickly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, I didn't do this right. Hold on. I got to make sure I share my desktop.
Okay.
Just a minute. I'm going back there.
Ben, do you have? Go ahead and take yourself off mute if you'd like, and if you care to elaborate on your query there. And thank you for bringing that up, because again, if you all are confused, I'm sure everyone else is too. So.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I did this pretty quickly. If you look at the net income for the 2 years on this P&L, the first year there's $69,000. And on the second year, there's $112,000. And I just made some assumptions about how much the way a lender does this is that they say, okay, how much net profit is there, and if I have to subtract out some money for taxes and living expenses, what's left over? Kind of what's left over after this business owner has paid their taxes and paid their own living expenses? What's left over if they want to take on debt? What's available to pay the monthly debt service? So at the bottom of this sheet is sort of where I did some of that calculation, and I'm sorry, I did run through it quickly. And so what you do is you see how much money is left over, and you compare it to what the actual payments might be. And you can do it on an annual basis or a monthly basis. But we're looking to see, like, once we take the net profit and we subtract out owner's draw and taxes and other kinds of – it also includes things like existing principal payments. There's more to it than, frankly, I've simplified it here. But everything that we know this person, the non-cash, the cash expenses that maybe are just on the balance sheet but that are coming out of the business, what's left over? And then we look at that number that's left over and compare it to what the loan payments would be for that business. So let's say if there's $10,000 left over after we've done that, all that calculation, but the loan payments for what they're looking for would be $15,000, then we know the business doesn't have enough cash to cover debt service. At least historically, the business hasn't had enough. Now, you can make the decision to loan on projections, but if you're just looking at has the business, like this year and or last year, produced enough profit to take on this much debt, we would say, well, it can't. So you want the cash available for debt service to be at about 125% of what the loan payments would be for that period. Does that make sense? Did that answer the question?
Yes. Hi, this is Bryn from Opportunity Fund. And just so our small business team doesn't get mad at us, this is the fundraising team on the call.
Okay. That's fine. Yes. And I'm sorry that, like I said, I'm going to just be honest as a trainer. It's really hard to do this in a one-hour webinar where we're not together in a classroom and learning this together. If there's follow-up questions, I'm happy to answer them later. And I have to. I used an example here. This P&L I got out of QuickBooks. This really isn't a micro business, probably. And it would be nice if I had a really clean micro business P&L 2 years trend analysis to work with. And I didn't have one, so I kind of used what I had. Where the numbers, you know, most micro lending programs are doing much smaller loans, and the payments are much smaller, and we're looking at much smaller amounts of money. But the principles are generally the same.
This is Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, I understand the calculation you did, but what I don't understand is how it came out to 2.21.
because if I've followed you correctly, it's $24,000 over $52,999.
Right. So you have like. Oh, did I do the math wrong? Is it? What is
I don't
the? What
know.
Is it? Then?
No, it's what you have available to pay over what the debt service paid.
Yeah, it's 52.
The other way around.
Over 24,000.
Yeah. Okay, and I thought I had done that, and let me. Okay. All right. I'm very good. Just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, and I think thank you for asking that question. And I'm sorry that was kind of rushed at the end. I always figure it's better to squish more information in, although it does make it a little rush. But I'm happy to do follow-up questions. If your organization feels like you want to do more in-depth, let me know. If there's other topics you want to cover, please let us know. And we'll either see what we can do through Cameo or, you know, I'm available also independently so we can do the best we can to take care of everybody.
And we do have another question, Susan. John,
sure.
He has his hand raised.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to see if we would have access to the slides.
Yes, many people have been asking that, and and yes, the slides are available.
How are they available?
They'll be on our website, I think. Is that accurate? Or should we send them, or will we send them around?
We're going to send them around.
Okay, yeah. We'll send them around to you. Mm-hmm.
Great, thanks.
Sure.
A question.
Sure, who is this?
This is Waleska. Waleska.
Oh, okay.
So
and which org are you with?
Business Development Center.
Okay.
So
go
if
ahead.
Someone is getting a loan from family and friends, would you not reflect that? I mean, that's one of those red flags, and so what would be the best way? Because there is no interest attached to that loan. It's pretty much cash that they have to receive, but they have to pay back. So what would be the best way to reflect that?
I'm sorry. I kind of missed the question. Can you repeat it?
How to handle a cash loan from family and friends.
Oh, that does or does not have to be paid back?
It does. Yeah.
I would book it, you know, I'd book it on my balance sheet, and I would make payments according to a schedule. I know a lot of families are more informal than that, but if your first loan for your business is from a family member, it would be great to get a client to structure it like a regular business loan, so when they're ready to access more traditional capital or even a micro lender, they kind of understand how it works. So I would definitely put it on the balance sheet, show any interest payments on the P&L, and mark off, and every time a payment is made, split between interest and principal. I would do it the same way. And even if it's
okay.
An interest-free loan, I would still book it. I would still put it in. I would do that, just again, help the business owner understand
mm-hmm.
how financing works. Anything else?
Susan, the borrowing red flag slide, you just had that up for just a second, and then we reverted back to the question on the debt income. Ah, yes. So if we want to just meditate on that for a second.
Yeah, and probably there's more than this. These are just a few of them. I just thought I'd share what, you know, you got to – I feel like, especially in this sort of – I've really sort of changed my own thinking about this, given I've worked closely with Axiom Texas to sort of give people lending if they manage money well and have the cash and not quiz them too much about what they're using it for. But at a certain point, it is our job to help them make sure they're making good investments, and some borrowers need more help than others on managing money. Credit cards and payday loans can be pitfalls. So there are times to step in and really help people manage debt properly. So these were just a few of the times when I think it's maybe appropriate to step in.
Yeah, thank you very much. Are there any more questions from anyone or comments? we probably have just a couple more minutes before this.
We get cut off?
Yes. This voice is going to come on and tell us that we have to hang up. So, Susan, I want to thank you so much for putting together this program for us. And again, just I think and most of you have signed up for the full series, which is fantastic. If you haven't signed up for the full series and you just want to go class by class, that's fine too. But the next webinar in this series is the Global Cash Analysis webinar, and that's on Thursday, October 16th. Looks like in my calendar that's also National Bosses Day. So.
And Chufina, you know, that's where we can go over the calculation at the bottom of that P&L that maybe was a little confusing. We can go through that a lot more slowly on the 16th.
That sounds good.
Explain that better. We'll have a little less material to cover and more time to do that.
Right. And maybe touch on a little bit more of the balance sheet, too, because I got the sense from today's group that there's still some confusion about
what belongs on the balance sheet.
What belongs there and how to post those entries.
Okay. Let's add that. And like I said, if anyone has a way for me to get a hold of some real bank statements, like that P&L I had was from that one company is such a useful learning tool, I'd love to figure out how to get a hold of some bank statements so we could talk about that kind of thing too, using bank statements as a way to discern ability to pay debt, pay a loan. So please contact me if you've got any ideas for me. I may just have to hunt down some business owner myself and beg for their bank statements.
Thank you so much, Susan, and thank you to everyone, again, for taking time out of your busy day to spend it with us and develop your own capacity and your organizations and your clients, and we will look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.